I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. I want to welcome my co-host, David Zutty. David, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be back.
So I would like to begin today by talking about the Thomas Massey defeat, if it is a defeat. He might have been defeated, but I think the people who defeated him might have defeated themselves. And that's the gist of what David argues in his article, which came out yesterday on Massey. So David, do you want to give us some background and we can then talk about this Thomas Massey debacle? I think there's actually a strong consensus in our sphere that this was sort of a Pyrrhic victory on the part of organized Jews and the Republican establishment.
Yeah, so Thomas Massey is a true believer libertarian, and even though he is part of the Republican Party, and so that means that he is not good on immigration. He's not always in lockstep with the rest of the Republicans, but he does agree with them on a lot of stuff. And he was originally part of MAGA or adjacent, or at least a supporter of Trump, against what he used to call the Uniparty, but he apparently joined it. And that was fine. And I have, I think, lambasted him online for his immigration stance. But that was not what caused all the drama here. The whole drama, the fact that Trump called him the worst congressman, the worst Republican in Congress, it's because of Zionism and Israel. So Trump was fine with him being weak on immigration. It was only with the Israel stuff, which really came, which is always brewing, but then came to a head with the recent Iran war, which may or may not have been won or lost multiple times by now. We're not sure, or even declared. That was a big thing, and that's what really got the Jews angry. This whole thing was not about immigration or being disloyal to Trump or weak sauce. The ones who are weak sauce on immigration and other stuff, those are wonderful people. Those are good little doggies. They're good little pets. Trump loves them. Look at Lindsey Graham. That's a rhino who Trump loves. This isn't about being a rhino at all. This is about Zionism. It's not about immigration either, because there are a lot of perfectly cucked people in Congress who do not get any attacks due to immigration. In fact, I would include Trump amongst those who are weak on immigration. I know there was some good news this week, but we need to keep that in perspective. Anything he's doing that to try to pander to us after having messed everything up. He did not put that at the top of the agenda.
Part of the problem for Massey, though, and this is a problem faced by Nancy Mace, it's a problem faced by Lauren Boebert and also Marjorie Taylor Greene, was that they signed off on demanding a full release of all the Epstein files. And of course, that's very much at the heart of the Jewish question in American politics as well. But Massey, yes, is an opponent of basically forever wars in the Middle East. A lot of the stuff that Trump actually ran on, I would argue, stuff that actually got him across the finish line with anti-war independents and centrists. Those are the things that he is being attacked about, because Trump has basically betrayed his promises, betrayed his base, and betrayed the American people.
Exactly. People are being kicked out of MAGA for being loyal to what MAGA used to stand for. They didn't change. Trump changed. The policy changed. And they're trying to be loyal to principles, whether or not they're misguided, or at least interests. You know, Massey, I think it is true believing principles, for better or worse. And because other people are being true to that, they're either sidelined or kicked out. They're attacked by MTG. You know, some of them resign gracefully, like Bovino resigned, and he seems to be trying to push. He's trying to play a difficult game of not attacking Trump while constructively critiquing the administration. But just like someone who is not in perfect lockstep with Nick Fuentes, it's probably only a matter of time before Trump attacks Bovino or sees him as a threat to his MAGA dynasty. And there are other cases too. There, Tulsi Gabbard, she resigned, and while this is for family matters, so she was one of the ones who wasn't really beating the war drums here. She's trying to stay focused on actually serving the country, you know, serving her people, cleaning stuff up, keeping foreign subversion out, transparency. And well, this is no longer her movement or party. She doesn't fit into the new scene of basically Mark Levin and Jews 24/7 all the time. So she gracefully resigned. But returning to Thomas Massey, this was the biggest, the most expensive House election most expensive House primary in all of history ever. And that's what caused this huge turnout. There were some initial allegations of fraud, but that isn't what happened. It's simply that money buys votes. It's just that Spengler, Carl Schmitt, every critic of democracy from the right is simply correct. That's just buying votes with money, and it's nothing to be proud of or put on a pedestal. It's a disgusting and dysfunctional system. So that's what happened. There is probably little to no actual fraud. And Thomas Massey has agreed with this. He wants to move on to other stuff that's more productive. But Massey lost to Gal Ryan, who's to his credit, is a Navy SEAL. I think that helped a lot. But it was 55% to 45%. And this speaks to another problem. This whole like vet bro, he's not a vet bro because he's not like one of these cringe influencers, but this whole like worship of the military and people in uniform needs to stop, because just because someone, even a Navy SEAL, did something doesn't mean that they're necessarily based. Like, there are plenty of people who are mercenaries. I knew plenty of shitlibs in my squadron. Look, there is this rising problem of the hicklib. Like, they're out of control. And so you have these hicklibs that get in with DC, the government, and they sell their people out. They're trying to climb the ladder. They actually start drinking the Kool-Aid because they associate success and power with libtardism, and they associate Republican stuff with like their economically disadvantaged community back home. So that's a big problem. But who caused that problem? Who caused the poverty there? It's not because the Southerners didn't do it. It's because of Yankee war of aggression and systematic deindustrialization. Whether they're stupid or they're being disingenuous and evil, I don't know. But he is part of this whole sheepdog. Look, it's a guy in a uniform. Go vote for him, Goyim. It's a really cringe thing that needs to stop. And yes, I do use my credentials, but that's because if they're going to do it, so will I. But going back to this was a huge battle. And Thomas Massey, he wasn't that far behind. The kosher right spent about $15 million. Massey spent a little bit less. And it was quite a blowout. But I'll go back to campaign funny. There was another primary which happened, which is not necessarily about Zionism. It was a multifaceted thing about Zionism and immigration, involving Casey Push. Now, Casey Push spent only, I think, less than $50,000. Vivek had a huge slush fund, and it came out to some huge disparity, which once you broke it down, yes, Casey Push only got 18% of the vote, but the ratio of how much money went per vote, it was 1 to 115. So for every dollar that Casey Push spent, that was worth $115 by Vivek, and basically buying votes through advertising. So that's huge. That is not sustainable across any election. You can't keep having the most expensive primary ever. And the big thing about these candidates who are either accidentally our guys or are our guys, you know, running for office, is that they have to be nipped in the bud in the primary. And the primary elections are usually the ones that are cheaper than the general election. And also, this is a good way to sabotage the evil, backstabbing Republican Party, because a contentious primary, a divisive primary, undermines the winner in the main election. This is why that cuck, the arch rhino Ronald Reagan, said that the 11th commandment is thou shalt not speak ill of other Republicans. Well, we do need to speak ill of them because they are race traitors and destroying the country and opening the doors to immigration, or they are in H-1Bs, or getting us into wars against Iran for Israel, and therefore causing incalculable economic damage, which we will be discussing later. But no, this is and everyone has seen this. In fact, AIPAC was bragging about how they did their standard line that supporting Jews, I forget what it was, but it's good policy, good politics to support Israel. Okay, you basically mean that if you don't go along with this, we're going to like hit you with a baseball bat. And everyone who isn't a Fox News watcher sees this, and they're disgusted by it. They see that the Jews are basically spying people and making and breaking people.
Right. And the good thing is that Massey did raise about as much money as his rivals put in. And he raised a whole lot more for this primary than he's ever raised in the past. And the most interesting contrast is therefore not the amount of money, but where the money was coming from. Massey was raising a lot of money in his home state, in his actual district, whereas the vast majority of funds that were being given to this Galarine character were out-of-state money. And beyond that, I think 80 to 85% of it was coming from big Zionist donors and lobbying groups. So it was very obvious that outside interests, indeed foreign interests, bought Gowrein his place on the ticket this fall. And it's obvious to everyone who looks at this, there's not any real way of hiding this. You can't sort of tap dance around this. Jews just went in from outside the state and bought this guy, Gowrein. They defeated Massey. They wanted to get him out of there because he was critical of them. He was not their man. Gowrein obviously is going to be their man. It raises all kinds of questions. Is this America first? I feel like the anime character gesturing at a floating Israeli flag, right? And saying, is this America first? This obviously can't be America first. And this is a problem that Trump created for the Jewish power structure by talking about America first. This is why Jews cringed when he started talking about America first. I remember back in 2015 when America first was a slogan again, and Jews were schwitzing about it. They were anxious about it. They talked about how anti-Semitic this was. Why do they think it's anti-Semitic? Well, basically, because previous to the return of America first nationalism, the Republican Party loved to just talk about values and things like democracy and rule of law. And Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and they are in keeping with our Judeo-Christian values, right? And because you can sort of slather on these universal values, okay, you can basically encompass Israel within America by not talking about countries, just talking about universal values. And of course, well, you can't do that when you talk about putting America first, because literally what that entails is people like Laura Loomer and Levin being as brazen as to say, this is a nice little America first movement you've got here. Do you mind if we maybe move in and create a little Israel first carve out in your America first movement? Now, they are brazen enough to do that, and they have done that with great success. But it's obvious to everybody that you cannot have an America first foreign policy that has an Israel first wing. That wing has to be lopped off. That wing is invasive, it's parasitic, it's subversive, and it has overturned the America first agenda in the Trump administration. And truth in advertising works. Again, if you go back to values-based conservatism, this was easy to do, but you can't do this with America first nationalism. The contradiction is blatant and obvious. And everywhere I look, I've been clicking on links to YouTube. I've been clicking links to go to X. I've been looking at threads on other platforms. Everybody sees this. It's just as obvious as can be. And this is a very, very great step forward for our cause. And it's an own goal. It is a self-defeat for the Jewish power structure because their power has never been more naked. And it's never been more obvious that it is subversive of American interests.
I think that after October 7th, there's a problem that accelerated where they know that their support is declining, so they're acting more brazen, but then their support declines even quicker, so they act even more brazen, and they're basically are trashing the country like it's an Airbnb on the way out. This is like a black family trashing the Airbnb, leaving crap everywhere because they were evicted and they're petty. And Trump is an idiot because he thinks that, I think he actually converted to Judaism. He might be part of that Chabad Lubavitch, but he's not a real Jew. They're going to basically ditch him as the fall guy after all this. And while, yes, they're gleefully gloating about how they crushed the woke Reich in the primaries, the general election is in November. At that time, the effects of the blockade of the Straits of Hormuz will be worse because along with the rising fuel prices, there will also be a big problem with food shortages. Not necessarily a shortage. We need to be careful about this, but food prices are going to rise up. This won't be a famine, but they could rise. I don't want to give a specific number, but my guesstimate is like 20%, which on top of generic inflation is going to be a lot. And I'll be talking about this later about the lunch wars. It's a food fight on X. You should all get part of this, make fun of boomers, or they're probably not even real boomers. I'll be nice. They're probably bots.
But, well, let's just go back to this for one second.
In the general election, it's going to be a complete bloodbath for the Republicans. It's going to be a blue wave of doom. And even with redistricting, even if they try to do all this cool stuff of immigration, they pander to the base, I think there's going to be a very massive blue wave, and that they are going to then impeach and probably for the first time in history convict Trump of both lying about Iran, war crimes like double tapping a girl school with smart bombs, and insider trading. And not just him, but other people in the administration. And the Jews are not going to back him up. All that Jewish power they got, but they got as much as they could. They're going to basically dump him. They were friends when they needed him. They were not friends before. And they're going to stop returning his phone calls, and he'll be kicked out of office, and J.D. Vance might be too. And this whole thing is good. And this is actually good because this will show, here's the thing. A lot of people are anti-accelerationist. So am I, but I believe in limited acceleration. For example, if we allow the Democrats to show us how crazy they are, and if they reveal how bad Zionism is for the last 2 years of the Republican term of office, let's be honest, Trump is probably going by Felicia. This will be good for 2028 so that we can run someone who is truly America first, and people will see the Democrats are just chomping at the bit to take control of the presidency so they can destroy the country. So that's a controlled little bit of accelerationism. It's moderate. It's very mild. I'm all for that. But it is going to be scary when they take over. It's going to be wild, but we probably will learn a lot about just how bad Trump was. Because what happens is that Trump and other people will be trying to throw themselves under the bus. And so there's going to be mud over everybody. It's going to be a huge mud fight, and that's a good thing. And most important, people will see that with Jews, you lose. It's being live streamed on TV that basically Trump sucked up to the Jews, Jewish power, and then they abandoned him.
Absolutely. I think that is definitely what's in store. I think that there will be a blue wave in the midterms. Already we see polls that are absolutely disastrous for Trump. He's down in a lot of key sectors that voted for him in the past. Now, there are going to be MAGA whisperers out in full force who are going to try and get some of these people back on the plantation. What they'll do is they'll say, yes, it's a very big disappointment, but he's done some good things on the border. The war will be over soon. He'll get back to working on this stuff. We've just got to keep these dastardly Democrats out of office. If they get into office, everything that Trump did will be wiped away. I think that's true. I think they are going to get into office, and I think everything good that he's done will be wiped away. I think that's unfortunate. I think Trump is entirely to blame for this. And that if the MAGA whisperers really want to make that kind of argument, which is very plausible, and if they really believe that argument, right, then hadn't they ought to be thinking about maybe deposing Trump before the midterms, before it's too late? If they really think that he's done good things, which he has, and that all the good things that he has done will be reversed by a vengeful left, which they will, then why are they trying to basically keep his ass in power, right? Which depends on a whole bunch of factors. Okay, you've got to have all these people in the House and the Senate reelected just to keep the left out of power, keep the Republican MAGA winning streak going, keep the good things going. That depends on a whole lot of variables all across the country. Given the stakes that they are painting, isn't it awfully dicey to keep Trump at the top of the party and to hope that all of these elections will go swimmingly well, even though all the polls are indicative that they won't go very well? Isn't that very risky? Wouldn't it be far less risky? And if they really believe the negative scenario that they're painting, which is quite plausible, wouldn't it be better to just pressure Trump to resign now or yesterday or the day before, as soon as possible, so that we can basically close the door on him, put him behind him, get somebody, Vance, in power, who can try and correct the course, get the economy out of the toilet, end the war, create more confidence in America amongst our, well, basically, not just the allies, but the whole damn world. The sooner we do that, the better. And I honestly think that there's a very strong case that can be made that Trump needs to be 25th amendmented. And the very people who are going to go out and make these apocalyptic claims that if the midterms go badly, they're not saying get rid of Trump. And that strikes me as bizarre. If they really believe this, they really should just get on board with getting rid of Trump as quickly as possible.
Right. To them, we're a bunch of panickins, but I'm not a panickin. They're a bunch of deer in the headlights, and nobody wants to be the sovereign who decides the exception. Right. I'm just hoping that this will happen magically. Like, there will be some deus ex machina thing that happens. Like, either Iran will have an uprising, they'll play nice, China will bail them out, they'll be able to like get fertilizer out of their ass, and that's not how it works. It comes from cows, not from humans. Or they think they can basically meme their way out. Just keep saying good stuff so the stock market goes up. The stock market don't real. That's not real value. That's just opinions of value, which aren't necessarily based in manufacturing. And people are already seeing how bad this is, and it's going to get worse. He's alienated everybody, like the key segments. Like, if you look at the stats, this is the numbers. You know, support amongst white males, amongst men who don't have college degrees. Those are the two things, like white male, low education. Those are the or some combination, though. Those are the biggest support, and it's tanked. Well, there aren't enough, like, boomers. Yeah, the boomers are going to show up because they don't have a job to go vote in the primary. The general election is going to be a very different thing. And Susie Wiles should know this. The lady who talks about how they're going to replace Karens with Jamals and Enriques. She might as well have said Shaniqua. Well, that's not going to happen. None of that support is going to happen. And there are people who are sophisticated or claim to be sophisticated. You should know this. And they don't care. They're basically looting the country. They're either stuck in the headlights or they're simply looting it. And Vance, I've lost all respect for Vance because not just have I kind of lost my patience with Indians, and he has an Indian wife, but he did not decide the exception. He plays Magic the Gathering. He should know better. He should have seen what's happening and been strategic and just said, like, just to save himself, Trump needs to go, or just threatened to resign if he attacked Iran, staked his career upon it, and trust that he'd be vindicated. The facts are facts. This is a matter of weapon systems, economics, honestly, science. We talk about fertilizer and all that. And they're not, they think they can basically bend reality to their will with memes and declarations. That's not how things work.
What we have is a paralysis of leadership at the top. Basically, and this is endemic to the whole system, but it's especially bad with Republicans, because Republicans, morally speaking, are always on the back foot. They're always feeling intimidated by the left, which somehow, I mean, these freaks, these absolute nation-wrecking freaks, are still in the minds of Republicans. And this impeaches Republicans utterly. In the minds of Republicans, these nation-wrecking, BLM-pandering, tranny-loving freaks on the left are still paragons of virtue and morality. Their opinions matter to the right, to the people on the right. They're the opinions of the liberal establishment matter to these people. And they quake in terror, especially of being called racist or anti-Semitic or nativist, whatever the terms that are used, they're afraid of this. And so what you have with Republicans is an entire party that for decades has basically selected people for being cowardly. And you saw this with BLM. During the BLM uprising, billions and billions of dollars were lost. Dozens of lives were destroyed, killed. People were injured. Cities were ruined. Livelihoods destroyed. It could have been stopped after the first day. It could have been stopped if Trump had just been courageous, just exercised leadership. Why didn't he do that? Well, he was worried about the black vote, as it turned out. He didn't want to be called a bad person, a meanie, for sending out troops to crush black rioters. Instead, remember, he was tweeting out that, oh, you must honor George Floyd, that kind of moral suasion to these low IQ rioters. It was just hopeless.
Plan.
Yeah, it was deer in the headlights, hopeless cowardice. And the entire Republican establishment was the same way. They were all just standing around, you know, shuffling uncomfortably, their hands in their pockets, nervously looking at one another, praying that somebody else would do something courageous to stop this so they don't have to take any responsibility. They don't have to exercise any leadership. The purpose of the head of state is to be where the buck stops, and if necessary, the scapegoat. Right? The guy who takes all the blame on himself from the people below him who follow orders and go out and start shooting rioters. And Trump wouldn't do it, and nobody around him wanted to do it. Nobody around him wanted the pressure. And we had months of chaos and destruction and untold deaths, untold damage, untold economic consequences, many livelihoods ruined because of their weakness. The first night's riots were on the rioters. The second night and every subsequent night in every different town across the nation, that was all on Trump and his failure of leadership. And we're seeing it again. We're seeing it again with all the people around him. Now, part of what's going on is this. The whole establishment knows that the Jewish power structure wants this war. And they're really the people running things because nobody will stand up against their preferences. Now, the people in the power structure fall into two camps. There are people who will go along with and justify the war. And then there are the people on the left who are poo-pooing it and saying it's a bad thing, et cetera. But secretly, they love it. But they're just trying to maintain their bona fides for the left, right? They're the peaceniks and things like that. They're trying to maintain their liberal bona fides while going along with this. Nobody wants to stop this. Nobody wants to put anything on the line to stop this. And it's an absolute catastrophe. This is probably going to be the biggest catastrophe in America's history, ultimately, so far. And why do I say that? Well, because America had a really great run for decades, 80 years after the Second World War. We were the top power in the world. And it was in this year that finally, I mean, we had ups and downs, losses, embarrassments, etc., but none of them fundamentally challenged the global consensus that America was the most powerful country and the most, in some ways, reliable country, especially economically, especially fiscally. And I think that Trump, by starting a war that he can't win with no real plan and just praying that somehow vibes and memes and Yahweh, you know, would miracle his ass through this without a catastrophe, by doing this, he showed that America's hyperpower is largely bluff, and that the petrodollar system, which is propping up America's global spendthrift status, I think is collapsing because of this, because that was based on a quid pro quo to keep these petrol exporting Gulf monarchies safe, in exchange for which they would take payments for oil in dollars and then recycle those dollars into basically low-yield U.S. Treasury bonds that allow us to keep our debt. Now, the quid pro quo has been completely violated on the part of America. We failed to protect them. And not only did we fail to protect them. We didn't even try at a certain point to protect them, because when push came to shove, we were pulling resources out of the Gulf to protect Israel, because Israel first. That basically destroyed, I think, America's credibility in the region, but the whole world has been watching this. And already we've seen the Gulf states turning to Ukraine, of all places, for help with drone, counter-drone warfare. We have seen shipments being priced in currencies other than dollars. We have seen the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, basically pressuring, blackmailing the United States into a huge loan because they're cash-strapped, because their country's been trashed and their economy is in tatters. They pressured the U.S. for a huge loan. Why? Basically because if they couldn't get a loan, they would start selling off their $95 billion in U.S. Treasury bonds that they're holding at a discount. And if those bonds are circulating at a discount, that means they cannot be sold by the U.S. Treasury and keep the whole thing afloat. And now already the bond yield rate is crept up over 5%. We're offering more to attract this money. And I think that these are all signs that America's petrodollar empire is collapsing. That is one significant element of the dollar status as a world reserve currency. Again, what this allows the United States to do is create enormous amounts of credit, but it doesn't make the US dollar inflate like the Zimbabwe dollar, because so many of these dollars are not being basically sent to America to chase goods and services. They're just in bank accounts around the world. If that starts wobbling, and the petrodollar might be the beginning of the end of the world reserve currency status, the United States is going to be totally insolvent rapidly. And we can all blame this on Trump. We can blame this on Trump. It was totally predictable that all of this would happen. Why do we know it was totally predictable? Because other presidents had been basically pressured by the Jews, by the Israelis, to attack Iran. And none of them were stupid enough to do it because of all these predictable consequences, which have now come true. So Trump is going to go down in history, I think, as the guy who did the most to end the American empire. And a lot of things are going to disappear in America once that happens. We are not going to be able to maintain these enormous debts. We are not going to have cheap food and cheap everything like we have in the past. We're not going to be able to look down our noses at the Euro poors who pay so much for their gas, right? All of this is coming to an end. And I think the famine word is something that we should use, because there will be famine in the third world because of this war. Crops will fail and people will go hungry. Will it happen in the first world? Well, what'll happen, the way famines always happen, is that prices rise to the point where some people can't afford to feed themselves. That's the way it'll be in Congo, in Bangladesh, right, in the Philippines. But it's also going to happen in America and Europe. The prices are going to rise dramatically and some people will not be able to feed themselves. Now, will there be a social safety net there to feed them? We better hope so.
As a giant Bhandari is fond of saying, that India is completely corrupt. In fact, the latest article that'll be probably coming this week is about how everything's transactional and about power. So, yeah, it's going to, the people who can call in favors will be able to eat.
It's very disturbing. And like I mentioned last week, I actually ordered a couple months' supply of rice and legumes recently, because I really thought, and this came as a complete surprise to me, because I've always, heard people talk about collapses and runaway inflation and economic stuff. And I've always thought, yeah, it's inevitable someday, given how stupid our policies are, that these things will happen. But I was never once moved to actually take any sort of prepper moves until now. And I'm astonished at the bovine complacency of the vast majority of people in the face of what I think is going to be a catastrophic economic downturn that's going to affect the United States as well. It's going to affect other parts of the world, poorer parts, more fragile parts of the world first, but it's coming home to the United States. And it really has to, because the United States is responsible for this problem. And Trump, in particular, is responsible for this. But he's only responsible for this because he wouldn't say no to the Israeli lobby.
Right. So a big problem here is that I'm very much into cyclical time. There are multiple cycles running at all times. They kind of overlap each other like hands on a clock. And one of the ones that is that I don't really go into that much, but I do think it is true. It's at least a pattern, is that Sir John Glubb talked about how in his article about empires, he talked about how most empires have a 250-year shelf life. It's almost like isotopes and nuclear material falling apart. It's like almost a law of nature. And there might be different reasons for this. For example, dynasties get burned out, but America's not a dynasty. But it does seem to be that 250 years is the standard thing, and we're coming up on that, actually. That's coming up this summer, and though nobody seems to care that much, and I don't blame them. And also that 250 years is very close to the 248-year Pluto return, which if you're into astrology, that's another thing that might coincide with Sir John Glubb's thing. But I do think the American empire is basically cooked. Like, nobody believes in it. It's a farce. There are multiple problems going on where, you know, what is America? Is it freedom? Well, we've lost freedom. It's a surveillance state. The issues with Chud the Builder is that we don't have the First or Second Amendment if you're white. We've always known that, but now it's really in your face, just like how the Jews own your politicians was in our face with Thomas Massie. It's just brazen. It's out there. We've had declining standards ever since 2008. And there are like little tiny recoveries, but it never went back to 2007. It never went back to my childhood or early adulthood. And now the Zoomers have no hope. It's like 2008 times 3 or 5. And so we're no longer the richest country in the world. We have people lecturing Zoomers on how they need to eat like it's the Warsaw Pact. So we have no freedom. We have no military power. We have no money. As Borat would say, I have no bear. I have no Pamela. It's like, don't we have a culture because we don't have Halloween because it's unsafe outside because of all these like feral dim youths, as they call them. And there's like, you can't patrol the perverts and put them in jail or otherwise liquidate them. And Christmas has been completely secularized by the Jews. It's a consumer orgy. I was disgusted by the behavior I saw when I used to work retail at JCPenney back in the day. And it's all just falling apart. Like, there's nothing left except a meme and a cult of personality. And look, Augustus had a cult of personality, but it's based because he actually stabilized stuff and raised living standards. And that's it. I don't think anyone should be celebrating the 250-year anniversary. If we celebrate anything, it should be that we're going to turn the page and be unburdened by what has been. And I do think we're going to have to make – I'm going to talk about AI and the economy and that later on in an article this week or the next week. But what's going to come down to is that the future will be either a communist revolution or a fascist revolution. This isn't sustainable, this whole democracy abomination thing, this charade. Like, there's nothing left. There's no economic power, no culture, even the race, even the founding stock has been completely degraded by Hart-Celler Act. Like, it's become a giant cantina. People in America are always saying, like, there's just foreigners everywhere. I think they're being undercounted. I think there's a lot more illegals than the official number, even from Trump, who has a motive to lie, to show up, what, to conceal that he's not being harsh. And Bovino has talked about it too. Like, there's all these legal and illegal ones is kind of everywhere, and they're breeding out of control.
Yeah, I agree. I honestly don't remember. I was a child when we had our 200th anniversary. And I've been trying to think back on it and recall if it was a big thing. But I don't recall actually how big it was, because I just remember as a child that my entire childhood was saturated with patriotism. I grew up in a very white part in the Pacific Northwest, and everything was saturated with patriotism, and we had a strong sense of who Americans were and American identity. And that was just the air. And so I can't really recall if I noticed an uptick in that in 1976, but I'm sure there was. Some people tell me there was a lot of celebration. The country was much more American than it 50 years ago than it is today. So within my lifetime, America has declined shockingly, dramatically. And we're approaching the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And it's obvious that most of the people in the country are checked out from this. They're not doing what they did for the 200th, put it that way. Now you can say, well, the 200 is a rounder number, whatever. Spare me. That's not what's going on here. America.
Trump is really trying to mean this golden age. So you think he'd be all in on the 250 mark. Like that's right. The whole thing, this stupid ballroom that he's into. It's like he's so obsessed with redecorating. It's like a mini game in a strategy game. You have to redecorate the ballroom to get points or whatever.
But what's going on is, okay, we've got 100 million more people in America than we did 50 years ago, at least. And the majority of that 100 million people really don't belong here. They've got no connection with America. If they have an attitude about America, about the America that was founded with the Declaration, which really wasn't the founding, but let's just leave that aside. The America that was founded through the Revolution and the Constitution, et cetera. If they have any opinions about that at all, it's evil. Right? It's cishet, white, normative, oppressive, evil stuff. And we owe them. We owe them. That's their opinion of America. They're not going to be celebrating America's 250th anniversary. We've got 100 million people with their hands out and their middle fingers extended, basically saying, this should be a reminder to you, Whitey, of all the promises you didn't keep to us. Oh, what promises? Well, let's look at the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. We'll just leave the rest out, right? All men are created equal. You failed to live up to that promise. They're not into this. And if they are into it, it's only going to be an occasion where they browbeat us for the 250 millionth time about how much we owe them, right? And the people who are on the other end of that pointing finger, the white American populace, what do we have to celebrate? Our country's been taken away from us. We are ruled against our wishes, against our interests, by this ever-growing flock of parasites who hate us. There's nothing to celebrate here. It's not my country anymore. I wish it were, but it's not my country. When I was a kid, I believed that America was my country and I was patriotic. It's not my country. And if there's an all hands on deck moment, if everybody has to, patriots have to rush forward and chip in to keep America from going down, I'm not going to do it. And it's very important to understand why. Any American who would sacrifice even a single fingernail to keep this system going is a chump. They will be asked, they are being asked to be patriotic and public-spirited to a society in which we are second-class citizens. And every single gesture of altruism will just be exploited. It's just, we'll be drained of it. It will never be recompensed. We won't even get a thank you for it. We'll just get pouting and demands for more and fingers wagging and saying it's about time, honky. That's all we've got to look forward to. So if America is about to go up in flames, if everybody needs to be at a station to keep this thing going, I'm not going to be there. And everybody who does go there, and they're going to be disproportionately white Americans, like the white Americans who flocked into the military after September 11, 2001, when we still had a country, even then, relative to what we have today, these people are being exploited and they should not do it. They should not allow that to be happening. White Americans need to withdraw their identification with the regime that rules them, which wears the skin suit of America, but it's not America. It's an enemy occupation government. And there was some reason to believe and some reason to hope that things were turning around with the Trump administration, but that's obviously not true because he has sold out America for Israel. And we should just divest ourselves psychologically, financially, in every possible way from this monstrosity and just let it go to hell.
Yeah, I remember when September 11th happened, it did seem we were unified. Now, of course, that fell apart pretty quickly, but at least for a few months, it was a thing before the Iraq war, you know, kind of tore everybody apart again. But that will never happen. It's completely embarrassing. And Hegseth tried to do this whole Patriot Tart thing to try to get people back into the military. I did speak well of him before. And that wasn't enough. He talked about how we need to go back to the 1990s. Well, we didn't go from 1990 to Biden overnight. So repairing it's going to take more. And these are systematic issues. This in everything, not just the military, but everything. And it can't be done in a year. And everyone, I'm almost happy that this was the bait and switch was so quick, so that more people didn't join in to try to keep this stupid thing afloat. Like, if you do enlist, and I do not recommend you do, just get the easiest thing, cushiest thing possible and bounce the GI Bill. You're not there to be a hero. You're not there to contribute. Just, it's another welfare program. And it's embarrassing because we now have foreigners, you know, foreigners and blacks on welfare getting better treatment than us. We have foreign students stealing college seats. And we're being told to basically eat bread and hyper-processed sliced ham and die of cancer that way, as many boomers are. They have horrible health habits. But it's completely ridiculous, and it's no longer recognizable. And if Trump wants us to be all patriotic, he's going to have to do more than little gimmicks and scraps off the table. He has done some good things. For example, the latest policy that he had today, and I will give credit where it's due, is that when people want to change their temporary status, they have to go back to their own shithole country and go through the consular office there. And I'm all for that because this will help. They're freaking out about it. They feel like, oh, you couldn't live without us. Oh my goodness. I guess you don't want smart people. No, I don't want you. If you're so smart, why didn't you make your country better? It's a complete shit show. And if that is true, I would actually feel bad because I'm basically stealing you from Nigeria or India or Turkestan or Djibouti or Botswana or Venezuela or wherever like stan you're from, so they can't develop. Like at some point, this is this weird, bizarre imperialism that becomes good because it's snatch brain draining. The third world is somehow cool now. Not that I don't think they're that smart, but if they were. This is actually worse than like anything that we allegedly did during colonialism or did do during colonialism, because we just take their natural resources that they weren't actually using because they were too stupid and lazy and disorganized. This is worse because we're actually debasing the genetic material of their population and depriving them of professionals like doctors and lawyers and engineers and dentists that could actually make their country suck less and create something nice over there. It's completely ridiculous. And they're all freaking out about, well, if it's true and we're being deprived now, well, you wouldn't be crying about it. You say, okay, I'm going to go elsewhere. You wouldn't be crying about it if you were actually a net benefit.
I love how liberals will virtue signal. I saw this on X when I was on X before, where you had some libtard in the UK saying, I just had my hip replaced by a Pakistani doctor, and they're virtue signaling. We couldn't deal without these people. My standard response was just a list of countries and doctors per thousand. UK, Pakistan, India, Afghanistan. And first of all, the UK had 10 times or 20 times more doctors per capita than these countries where these virtue signal doctors were from, right? And Yet somehow this was virtuous and liberal to strip professionals out of these countries that are very poor in these professionals anyway. I liked him humiliating them that way. Of course, they never responded. I got blocked several times, which I guess is a form of response and actually a pretty revealing one. Let's move on to a couple other things. We've already talked about the Massey debacle. I think it was less a defeat for Massey than it was for the people who, quote unquote, won this round. I don't think Massey's going to be gone. I think he's got a lot of credibility. I hope that he's around. I hope that his story gets widely known. And I hope that he makes the Jewish establishment regret what they've done to him. Now, I don't agree with his philosophy on a lot of things. I wouldn't want him to be president, quite honestly. But I'm glad he's out there. I hope he gets a lot of traction, a lot of publicity. And that he makes the most out of this. I think this is very, very important. We've talked about the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. We are approaching that, and the country just doesn't seem to be interested in it. And for good reason. It's not our country anymore, white people's country. And the new Americans, they don't have anything to celebrate. It's not their country either. And the only thing that they care about with the Declaration of Independence is taking one line out of it and using it to beat us over the head to try and get more Gibbs out of us, to give us more guilt so we give them more Gibbs. That's all there is to it. And I've washed my hands of this. I think every patriotic white American needs to wash their hands of this abomination.
In fact, the Declaration of Independence, all that nonsense about equality, that was never ratified. That is simply a piece of wartime propaganda. It is not a founding document. It is a cynical piece of propaganda about Crown Man bad. It's never voted upon because it actually is that stupid.
There were actually other declarations of independence from the different colonies as well. So it's not a legal document in the United States. The United States didn't exist then, right? The foundation of the United States legally is the Constitution, which says nothing about all men are created equal, but does talk about Indians as being foreigners and blacks as being three-fifths of a person only for apportioning representatives. That's the quote-unquote egalitarianism of the Constitution. So what attitude should white Americans have towards this present regime? It's not our government. We should sacrifice nothing to it. Let the immigrants sacrifice to keep the whole thing going. It's not our government. We should sacrifice nothing to it. Well, if we're going to sacrifice nothing to it, why don't we get the most out of it possible? I honestly think that we should just loot the place. That's the attitude that we should have to a foreign occupation regime, especially an evil, exploitative, and morally obscene, fraudulent foreign occupation regime. Loot it. And that's what Trump is doing. Trump is goosing the stock markets up and down and doing insider trading. The people around him are basically looting. What happens when Trump falsely claims the war is almost over and then the markets rally? That means that chumps who believe him are putting money in and driving prices up. And then the news comes out that it was just another lie, just another fake victory. What happens then? Prices drop. Now, if people short the system, if they put shorts in, what that means is that when other people lose money by seeing their stock prices decline, these people profit from it. Profiting from the decline of value. It basically is just, it sounds so Jewish to me, right? Profiting from the decline of your values. It sounds like the pornography industry. It sounds like Hollywood. That's what's going on. It's looting. It's looting the chumps who believe the president and put their money in the system. And you know that Trump and the people around him are doing this. You know it. And if they're looting, then we should just start looting as well. It would be extremely foolish for us to believe in this system, invest in this system, sacrifice in any way to this system. So that, I think, should be basically how we look at politics in America today. If we're going to talk about organizing, political organization, if we're going to get involved in politics at all, we need to have Bill the Butcher. We need to have Tammany Hall. We need to have patronage rackets that deliver absolutely concrete benefits to white constituencies, or we're having none of it, right? And I think that that's the way this has got to be. We should no longer be the responsible people who's trying to make it all work, because that assumes that, you know, we're in charge and we're sacrificing to keep the system going. It's not our system. We're just going to get as much out of it as we possibly can. And that is going to entail a great deal of cynicism about the current system and a great deal of basically mercenary politics, just greed. White Americans just need to start looting this system, not being the people who pay for the looting. And once we start reorienting our political activity in that way, I think things will get better marginally for us. And that's really the only way forward. The only way forward for white identity politics is to first cease to identify with the system that is destroying us, and to identify with our group as a collective, to regard ourselves as an outgroup, as a victimized outgroup, and to try and get as much as we can out of this system.
Right. I really do think, going back to the mercenary thing, we do need to act like an ethnic mafia like the Jews do. Everyone, and also I think we need to, kind of hitting on the lunch war, we need to have a youth lobby, not just a white lobby, but also a youth lobby that's aggressive, that is as aggressive as AARP. Because if you look, it's not just the boomers have large numbers, it's that they're highly organized and kind of vicious when it comes to Social Security and Medicare. And we have to get organized too, and basically say we don't care. You can either do our way or the highway, and we have interest too. And yes, we'd like to work with you, but you can't. You have to stop having this single-minded focus on Social Security. And if you don't, we're gonna have a single-minded focus on our issues, and that involves basically throwing elections, letting Democrats take over and burn it all down. Fine with us. We have nothing to lose. You have a lot more. And that sounds harsh, but I have tried so hard to make a deal. I sound like Trump. This goes back to 2016. We have been trying to work within the system, within the establishment. We've been canceled. We've been treated like trash. We've been deplatformed, censored. People will talk about your stuff but not cite you. They'll kick me out of the Federal Society. Okay, why should I care about what happens to all these rhino judges under a Democrat regime when then their precious Federal Society treated me like I was worse than a communist or a Satanist? Like, this is ridiculous. I don't have any problem playing hardball now, because everyone has played hardball with me for, at this point, and 10 years of culture war. And I have to warn you people, the moment we start winning, they'll start trying to get us to be, you know, come in and work together, and they'll just betray us again. No, we take everything and burn it down. That's why I've talked to some people I used to know, and they have noticed I've become a lot more aggressive with this stuff. Well, it's because, not just because we've been burned systematically for 10 years of culture war, but because I know it's coming on the horizon. We're going to enter the exact, not the exact, but very similar conditions to Weimar Germany or interwar Italy, where we have crazed leftists going around, stagflation, bad economy. But people forget this. The NSDAP took off not because they're naming the Jew. It's because it was the economy, stupid. The economy was bad, and they were the only ones proposing solutions. Who are you going to go to? Like, the Democrats caused all these problems. The center-left caused all these problems here under Dark Brandon and Kamala Quisha. Now, Donald Trump, the Republican, not just a center Republican, but MAGA, made them even worse. So the center left and right and even MAGA have been discredited. So what do you have? You have basically communism or fascism. They might wear different labels, but I don't see any other option here. So maybe we should go all in. And that way, I have the receipts. I can cash in later on. And two, I don't want to be, I'm very, very anti-Trump, not just because I'm offended by his dishonorable conduct, but because I don't want to be associated with him. I think a lot of people who are sucking up to the Jews and Trump now and MAGA are going to regret that when Chipotle burritos cost even more than they already do come fall. I think it's going to be a dark autumn and a very nasty harvest that comes in of high food prices and inflation and more Jew noticing. And that's going to be that. And I am positioning myself for that. I don't see how it cannot be that. In fact, I'm very disturbed by this and I'm not happy about it. But if I have to take the bitter, I'm going to take the sweet too and play hardball and try to cash in.
I do think that the direction that we're going in is basically going to be a backlash against the fake, traitorous, and Republican right, and MAGA as well, sadly, because they just sold out to the Republicans, and there's going to be a leftist backlash. Now, what's going to happen with this leftist backlash? Leftism isn't going to start working again. It never worked. It's not going to start magically working just because people are disappointed in Trump. It's just a bunch of looters. I'm starting to sound like Ayn Rand, but that's all the left is. It's just a bunch of looters and not even a single organized barbarian tribe, but a whole bunch of barbarian tribes that just want to loot. There's no wise elder. There's no wise king. There's no sovereign here. It's just a hive mind of greedy, venomous, hateful anti-whites who just want to get theirs, right? They feel entitled. They feel entitled to what's yours, not just to what's theirs. They're going to wreck the country. And I'm going to get out of the way. I would certainly never do anything. I never did January 6th. I'd certainly never do anything like January 6th to defend Donald Trump. I'm looking forward to him being impeached and convicted and chewed up and spat out by the justice system and his whole family too. Perhaps Melania and Barron can flee to Slovenia or something like that. I don't have any real ill will against them. But most of these people are just absolute scum, and I would love to see their lives ruined for all the damage they've done. Now, not just the damage that they've done by doing things like taking billion-dollar bribes like Kushner did and starting this war that's going to be so catastrophic. All the things that they didn't do as well, they need to be punished for. And the main thing they need to be punished for is simply frittering away scarce time when all of their time and efforts should have been spent on saving America, deporting 100 million people or making a good start at it, rolling back anti-whiteness, all of that. That could have taken all of their time and energy to do right, and enshrining that in law and making sure that there's a MAGA dynasty that keeps this going for a decade to come. That's what they should have been doing. And instead, they frittered it all away, doing favors for Jews, basically, foreigners. And that's unforgivable. And I hope they're punished. And I hope that people might learn something, right, from this kind of punishment. But the left isn't going to fix things. They're only going to make things worse. The country will be worse. It'll be poorer. It'll be more chaotic. There will be more crime, more violence. And what are they going to do? Are they going to blame themselves? Of course not. They'll just blame the rich because, well, that's their script, right? They'll want to loot people like Peter Thiel, right? And Elon Musk and Mark Andreessen and these are the Silicon Valley types, but all the billionaires, all the hedge fund billionaires, all these people are going to get looted. They're going to get looted. They're going to get prosecuted. They're going to get their dreams canceled, their lives ruined. It's just going to happen. At this point, nationalists, identitarians, people like us, we don't want to be in either camp. We don't want to be in the Republican camp. And we're certainly not going to be in the left camp. We need to build an alternative. And that alternative is going to be something very much, shockingly, very much like interwar fascism. And capital is going to have to come to us and make a deal if they're going to keep anything. And basically, the deal that they're going to have to take is they're going to have to cut back on their globalism and their nation-wrecking preferences, their H-1Bs and all this kind of stuff. They're going to have to sacrifice that to have a nice white country in which they can live and do business and prosper. They might be poorer, relatively speaking. They'll still be rich, enormously rich, but they might be slightly poorer because they can't completely debase the ethnic composition of the country anymore to squeeze a little bit more profit out every quarter. We're just going to say to capital, you can't do that anymore. And if you insist on doing that, if you want to force the issue, when we're going to have to fight harder, but when we win, we will expropriate all of your ill-gotten gains and distribute it to the American people who've been screwed by these globalists. That should be our position. And how we govern and things like that, it's entirely open. I'm somewhat partial to the mixed regime, the American system. But there's going to have to be a rectification of a lot of things. And one thing will have to be that capital will be brought to heel and the rich will have to fear the people again. Now, as an ex-libertarian, I have to tell you that if you predicted 25 years ago, 30 years ago, that I'd be saying things like, the rich have to fear the people again, I would think you're completely insane, because that's very unlibertarian talk, but that's really the truth. The rich are going to have to fear the people again. And the only other alternative that they're going to have is complete expropriation and destruction. And that's the system, that's the thing that they're creating, and really everybody's creating, just by being stupid and weak and allowing things to come to this terrible pass. But that's the way forward. So in the short term, complete divestment from the system. It's not our system anymore. If we politically organize at all, it's basically to loot the place and gain as much money and power out of it as possible. Why? Because in the end, we need to have that political capital and capital, because there's going to be a big showdown. And the big showdown is going to be between the trembling, largely white bourgeoisie and the insane, largely non-white far left that's out for blood and expropriation of wealth. And we want to be strong enough to put an end to that and actually save the country.
Yeah, we're not going to fall for this again. We really have to stop the whole Charlie Brown being screwed over by Lucy with the football. And I don't have any connection to the Republican Party. And along with what we could do, like, you have to understand, like, if the Democrats get power again, not just divided government, but actually like the can become gain the executive, they're going to go after us, but they're going to go after the Republicans a lot more. And they won't be able to control themselves. And they have a lot, like, imagine what someone like Gavin Newsom and little Jasmine Felicia Crockett would do. They'd be taxing unrealized gains. It might cut Social Security. And that's just that. Like, I don't have that much to lose. Look at us. We don't have the First or Second Amendment, as the whole Chud the Builder incident proves. Those are privileges now, according to the prosecutor in that case. But they have a lot more money to lose. And so they have to get off their high horse and make a deal with us. And everyone is allowed to run roughshod over us. You know, non-whites, women, boomers. No, we have to start standing up for ourselves and quit keeping this whole system going. And in addition to all this, the AI revolution is going to require an authoritarian regime to implement it, because if not, it's going to be a complete disaster and possibly lead to total communism. Or it will be worse than communism. It will be basically a brown biomass upheaval, because it will be, wealth will not be shared equally. The thing with AI is that there's this thing where you want everyone else to lose their job and you keep yours. And there's going to be a big fight over that. And also in revolutions, or was the Industrial Revolution or the PC Revolution in the 90s, the rewards are not spread equally. And what's going to happen to the AI revolution, but if it's not done in a controlled manner, all the benefits are going to go to a select few, none of it to us. Right? Right now, they're using AI to basically, they've turned job applications into Tinder. It's the same hose on Tinder using AI to reject job applications of anyone who is white or male and straight and normal and has a college degree. Well, right now, AI hasn't really helped people except for like making funny videos. It's done some stuff, but it has the potential to get rid of all these people who are like what we call pink collar jobs, like paralegals. Paralegals are based, but look, other people, office drones, but they're not going to want to do that. They're going to want to use AI to get rid of other people's jobs. And I mean, the whole, it's not going to be good. It has to be done in a controlled manner where we implement UBI at some level. And ideally, instead of giving blacks UBI, I mean, EBT, it's all the same difference. It's socialism for blacks, women, and boomers, and cutthroat capitalism for people like me. Mm-hmm. Well, what we're going to do is that we should be paid more because we don't cause problems. Black people cause, in addition to not being lazy and not working jobs, they cause so many problems with incidents, criminality, welfare usage, emergency services in general, that it takes currently one white person to support about four blacks. Okay, well, if we're paying these people money, shouldn't you pay people money for being good? It's very much like the story of the prodigal son, which is part of why I stopped being Christian pretty young, actually, as a kid, because I was so disgusted by the stories. Like, it was an insult to me. The loser retard who has bad time preference gets coddled with a big feast because, oh, gosh, golly, the souls are saved. We got ourselves a heathen converted. Okay, that's cute. But the good son who's like me, the guy who works hard, gets nothing and is taken for granted because I'm already doing my stuff. No, I should be paid more. I should get not just the same amount as EBT as black people do. I should get more because I'm not causing problems for the system. I'm not tweaking and twerking. I'm being a good citizen. Mm-hmm. And right now we have this perverse incentive where we subsidize failure and losers instead of winners. And right. You have perverse incentives, even without blacks, you get perverse outcomes. And that's right. My little rant about how unfair this whole capital socialist system is.
No matter what happens with AI, it's going to be an economic catastrophe. If AI is just a giant bubble, obviously that bubble is going to burst and it's going to be an economic catastrophe. If AI actually works, that means that a lot of people are going to lose their jobs and that will be an economic catastrophe. In America, with the free market or what semblance we have of the free market, what that means is that it will be rational for every employer who can put people out of work to put people out of work. They will think, okay, well, I'm putting people out of work and I'm going to save so much money that I'll be doing a whole lot better, right? However, what they're counting on is they're counting on being able to put their employees out of work, but they're not counting on AI to put their customers out of work. Because if AI puts their customers out of work, then their customers aren't going to show up and buy things from their new AI shop, right? Where they don't have to pay anybody for a lot of jobs. And so they're going to suffer too, and say that they're just two businesses in our highly simplified economy, and each business employs one person, and both businesses, through selfish motives, lay off their employees, and that's that. Well, what that means is that the employee in business one who patronizes business two will have no money to patronize business two, and vice versa. And so what we are going to get is a situation where they've magically, dramatically increased their profitability, were it not for the fact that nobody has any money to spend in their businesses. And there's one thing that you can't computerize, you can't automate, and that's consuming your products, right? You actually have to have a real person paying real money to consume your products or your business goes tits up. You're not going to be able to go to some guy and say, well, you know, I put all my employees out of work with AI, and all the other businesses in my town did the same thing, and now nobody's coming into my business. Can you build a robot that will come in and patronize my hot dog stand? Obviously, that's not going to work. And so if we just allow this to work its way out with individuals thinking about their personal interests and their bottom line, we're going to create a massive economic catastrophe. It's simply the only possible outcome. We're going to have a terrible economic catastrophe, terrible chaos. And yes, people are going to want the government to quote unquote do something. And what will they do? Well, given that leftists are stupid, crazy, and evil for the most part, they'll just mess things up even worse. So yes, it's going to be a great opportunity for people who are willing to actually exercise an authoritarian leadership style, because you're going to need an authoritarian leadership style to actually deal with this unfolding AI catastrophe. And you're going to need a little bit of realism, which the left doesn't have, because basically, again, they're just a bunch of resentful losers out to loot more productive people who are now no longer able to produce anything, right? I guess they can loot the machines. Basically, the solution that they're going to propose is just, we'll just nationalize all the means of production, communism, and put massive taxes on all the billionaires who got really rich selling all this equipment that basically put our economy in the toilet. That's what they'll do. Obviously, we need something better than that, because it could be enormously helpful to us, but it's got to be cashed out in ways that actually benefit everybody, not just the very, very rich. And how would you do that? Well, you would do that by, for instance, shorter working hours.
We never got shorter working hours after the PC revolution. There was so much efficiency and wealth generated, but the hours
that all went to the capitalists.
Right. We didn't get any. Warcraft 3 is nice, World of Warcraft, Microsoft Word, but nobody got any time off. Let's be real about that. Any of the wealth that was generated, we didn't get it. We can't afford a home.
You're going to have state-mandated goals and policies that, okay, as we go to the more AI-driven economy, we're going to have assurance that a person can support himself and a family not on 40 hours a week, because there are going to be fewer and fewer hours needed for people to work in this economy. It'll have to go from 40 hours a week, which is idyllic for some people. They can't afford to live working 40 hours a week just for themselves. We'll leave that aside. We're going to have to make sure that people can work 20 hours a week and have a life, maybe 10, right? As machines get more productive, the benefits of productivity have to go to the people. Why? Well, again, because you can't automate consumption. You can't replace the people. The whole purpose of the damned economy is to provide goods and services for people. And if you have this dystopia where you basically put everybody out of work, and they're just left to their own devices, or to basically scramble around and find a political solution, which almost inevitably will be something stupid, destructive, crazy, Zoran Mamdani style communist evil, then you're just stupid, right? That's a stupid endpoint. But I see no sign of people who are more responsible having anything to say about this. Maybe there are a few liberal technocrats who will gesture in that direction, but if you give them power, they're just going to be putting more gibes in the hands of BLM rioters. It's a come on for some of these people, I think, to talk that way, but it's not actually going to happen from the left. And there's nobody on the right who's responsible, broad-minded, and willing to frankly say that we need a great deal of power and to use this power to redistribute wealth, so that the productivity gains that we are seeing promised actually make society better rather than just cause it to go into chaos and communism in the end.
The problem with democracy is that people can't think past election cycles. The problem with capitalism is that people can't think past basically quarterly earning statements or when they can do their vulture hedge fund looting of stuff over a few years. So it's very short-sighted, and they're not going to outlive this. They're going to face reality. All the people who thought that they could basically just keep the machine running and they'd be dead before Social Security crashed or whatever, like, you're not, those people already died. Everyone else has to deal with this now and not kick the can down the road. And it's very dangerous. And also the other big issue, why we need an authoritarian regime and why I'm not going to shy away from the other F-bomb, is that we have judges who are out of control here. And they're going to need to be given the treatment that the judges were given in El Salvador by Bukele. You have people, this is going on right now with the Chud the Builder thing, where he was given 1.25 million bail. This was reduced, oh so graciously, to 1 million bail. And there is, of course, hundreds of examples of judges, and we're not cherry picking, there's just example after example, some feral African doing something totally heinous where they either killed or raped or did a carjacking, or they have a huge rap list and they get like some minuscule bail at $25,000. And they're also allowed to fundraise for bail, unlike Chud the Builder, or they have lenient, you know, bail restrictions. While Chud's is very, very extreme. Well, what this comes down to is that they just need to be, in my opinion, thrown into work camps or deported. This is why we need an authoritarian regime, is that they need to, there are either two ways of dealing with the judiciary. You ignore them, you stop paying them, you stop enforcing their orders, or you just throw them in their own prisons. Like, at some point, we have to get real here. We need a Kaiser. This whole system has, it's working as intended, which is bad. It's a bad system. It's gone. Hey, happy 250 years. The First and Second Amendment don't exist for white Americans anymore. It's in your face. Jews run the country. Judges are completely out of control. And we have to deal with the dark triad question. Another reason why we need an authoritarian regime that is fascist is the gene editing and reproductive technology like IVF, because the liberals, and I think someone wrote this about this, where there is a racial question inherent in this, is what type of babies will people choose? Well, the left would choose a bunch of good little insects and communists and freaks of nature if they have kids at all. And we would prefer kids that are, along with being white, more intelligent, nice, good. Well, this is important. This is like immigration times 100. You're literally changing the country even more than through immigration, and possibly quite quickly. We need to basically genocide the dark triad traits from our genome so that there's no more judges, no more Antifa, no more FBI agents, no more Nick Fuentes, no more Richard Spencer, no more Donald Trump. These people have caused incalculable harm to our civilization because these people who are dark triad, they work with the Jews to just destroy everything. These ladder-climbing careerists who are soulless, these HR bosses. They have to be bred. They're filthy, dysfunctional genes. They're also highly aggravating. Have to be just gradually or ideally quickly dealt with. They just have to be said, like, no. This is like bringing a kid into the world who has like cystic fibrosis, except the retardation is going to hit all society. Yeah. And they're horrible people. Like, they're always conniving.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We would still have judges and doctors and politicians. They just wouldn't be psychopaths, right? They wouldn't be dark triad people. They'd actually be public spirited people rather than sociopathic people. We have a system where the higher you go in the social hierarchy, the more sociopathic people are. That's an absolutely doomed, dysfunctional system. The only way to have good government is to have better than average people at the top rather than worse than average people. And we have a system that selects for worse than average people, psychologically speaking, people who are narcissistic, sociopathic, and Machiavellian. If we can isolate genes for these things and select them out of the gene pool in the next generation. Absolutely. We should definitely do that. I completely agree.
I, of course, want to change the Machiavellian term to something else, because Machiavelli was a good boy. He did nothing wrong. He wanted to make Italy Roman again. He wasn't one of these like evil people. But
Machiavelli was a nationalist. And yes. But anyway.
I also had a front row seat at how with these people, because they tend to go towards law, military, and politics, and I've kind of involved with all three. And they're just so aggravating. They're just destructive. They bring nothing to the table. All they cause is problems. They're just so weak. They're like vicious, but they're like Indians, very vicious, but very weak. And just asking to be finally put in their place.
So I have a question here from Max. Max, he wants to change the subject. Max wants to know about our current reading. So since I saw the question first, I'll go first and give you a chance to think about what you have been reading recently. Okay, Max, I've got a stack of books, actually, that I've been reading, so I'll just riff through this. I always hate the people who put pictures of their reading piles out. I guess I'm doing a verbal equivalent of this, but you asked, so I appreciate it. Okay, I am rereading José Pedro Zuqueta's book, The Identitarians, which is about the identitarian movement, including Casa Pound in Europe, came out in 2018. I think it's an excellent book. At the end of 2018, I said I was going to write a review of it, and I talked about it a good deal at an event that I did in Lithuania in February of 2019. And then I just sat down and couldn't finish writing the review because I thought I sort of said it all. So anyway, I'm going back to it because I found a draft and I thought, you know, there's a lot of good stuff here. And so I'm rereading the book and I'm going to write up a review of it. So that's something that's on the horizon. I am continuing to read Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I'm now in volume 4. And basically, volume 4 is, it's almost two just biographies, one of Theodoric and but the vast bulk of it is on Justinian. And although the writing is brilliant, the story is very, very bleak and depressing. And I kind of sense that a lot of people sort of gave up by the end of the fourth volume because the Roman Empire in the West is dead. There was a brief attempt to revive some of it with Justinian, but reading about it all is profoundly depressing. Although the character of Belisarius, his great general, is really well drawn, and he was really one of the fascinating figures of history and one of the great military leaders of all time. And Gibbon's comments on him are quite fascinating. So I'm enjoying that. I might just throw in the towel after volume 4. I'll get around to volume 5 and 6 eventually. But honestly, Byzantine history is pretty depressing. So I am reading that. And what else am I reading? I'm reading the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas by Gertrude Stein, because I wrote this article about Gertrude Stein, this review essay on Barbara Will's book about Stein's politics. And I said, you know, I honestly should just read this book and look at it from the political point of view. It's very interesting. I'm really interested in the biographies of creative people. And Stein was at the center of a salon and a culture of highly creative people, both French and expat, living in Paris between the wars. So all of that's really interesting. I am enjoying that, but I'm just reading that in little fits and starts. And then I've got this big book by a guy named Grant on the history of Athens. And once I got deep into medieval Athens, it got so depressing I set it aside, but I do have to try and finish that. I want to follow the story of Athens all the way up to the present. So that's what I've been reading. David, what are you looking at?
So I am finally gotten around to reading The Culture of Critique, which you would assume I would have read by now, but I was so marinated in the memes and ideology and podcasts of the initial alt-right when it took of 2017 when I got involved and started following it after Charlottesville. I came out of my little isolated cocoon of paranoia in the military, and I basically got all the spark notes that way. And so I decided to read other stuff than Cultural Critique, but the new edition, I've decided to finally buckle down and read it from back to finish and get the real source. And it's a lot more moderate than some of the people who like to cite it, make it out to be. So that's nice. It's a very strong argument, and I like strong arguments. And there's tons, just example after example of Jewish power and to deny this, you have to basically be disingenuous. I think even an idiot would see it. It's, you have to basically be highly biased or disingenuous to deny that his thesis that Jewish power exists and it's used in a way that's very critical and vicious and undermines the host country. Like, it's that. And yes, Jews are nepotistic. Not all Jews, of course, but they're individuals don't matter when you talk about the power of a community. There's boomer power in AARP, even though there's tons of boomers who are not single-mindedly focused on Social Security. There's plenty of good ones who do care about the youth. Well, AARP is that community's power, just like AIPAC is the Jewish community's power, even if you have a base Jewish friend. These are facts. And it goes in one direction only. It's usually tearing stuff apart, you know, very harsh objectivism for our stuff while putting their stuff on a pedestal. And one of the things I want to learn more about is the circulation of elites that happened when the Jews overthrew the WASPs, because I know there was initially resistance. They had a quota at Harvard on Jews, but after they broke through, it seemed to have been just a turkey shoot. Like they broke through, and by the 30s, it was just done. And why didn't the Anglo elites, the WASP elites, push back? Why didn't they regroup and launch their own war against the Jews for elite power? Why didn't they start their own newspapers or try to take over Jewish newspapers? Like, were they just, I have a horrible feeling that they were simply out to lunch and didn't understand how power worked because they're too mercantile. That's a hypothesis I need to test. I need to learn more about this. But yeah, they got control of the media. And then once they got control of academia, after some initial resistance, it was just all downhill from there. Those, of course, the two prongs of Garvin's cathedral theory. But why was there no pushback? Because these people controlled a lot of money, a lot of wealth, prestige. They were networked. Why weren't WASPs across the country who had all this money and influence, you know, launch a counterattack? Were they just too busy making money or something? I don't know what happened. It's weird. But that quick, you know, the Jews took over Russia with tons of dead bodies, and America just kind of like wheedled their way in.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it was that the WASPs just felt that the country was theirs and that it couldn't really be taken away from them. I think part of it is a certain sort of complacency. There's also this incredibly grandiose attitude that everybody wants to get into our countries and into our systems so they can become us. So yes, you just open the borders to these people, the Syrians or the Jews or whatever wave of increasingly heterogeneous people are coming towards you. And because you're magic, right? You're so magical. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody wants to become like you. You're so magical that you don't even have to try to assimilate them, right? They'll just become like you. There's no unhappy ending to that story, because they're just so high on themselves. Years ago, when I was in Sweden, this Swedish nationalist woman and I were talking, and she said, "Greg, you have to understand, every Swedish leftist thinks that these Somalians and Pakistanis and Syrians want to be like them. They really believe that their way of life is the best way of life for all mankind, and everybody wants to be just like them." It's an extraordinarily delusional idea, and it makes them very, very vulnerable, because they don't believe there can be any unhappy ending. You know, they let all these people in, and they'll all just become them. And I think that's increasingly obvious that that's delusional. It's not going to happen.
Right, and exactly what would they be assimilating into at this point? Like, they have this thing about rainbow hijabs, like, oh, the Muslims are become like these libtards. Like, nobody wants to, what is there to assimilate into? The cheeseburgers are too expensive. There's no freedom. It just would be degeneracy. Like, there's no real thing to assimilate into anymore that's positive. In fact, that's attacked viciously and torn down by the establishment. It's, and why would they want to be part of a country that kind of destroyed itself? Like they're so high off their own supply. Like, no, these third worlders don't want to be like you. They think you're weak and they want to take advantage of you.
So I have an email here from Screaming in Seattle, who wants us to talk about the Jared Taylor pitch video that we put up on Friday at Countercurrents. This is from the Countercurrents retreat in spring in Rome. And one of the things we did was a panel on what we would say if we had a few minutes alone with a billionaire to try and get them on board with our cause. And Jared spoke on that panel. And as you will see, Keith Woods spoke on it. And also David spoke on it. And so the question is, so what would your pitch to a billionaire be? And so I'll go first. And David actually did a pitch on this panel, so he can repeat some of the stuff that he said. I didn't actually give a pitch, but basically, and I need to get it down to 5 minutes, actually. I just haven't been able to do this. I did an interview with Keith Woods where I talked about this, but basically the argument is that there's an article also, forgive me, on politics, metapolitics, and hegemony that I published, Countercurrents, which sort of says this pitch in about 1,000 words. But basically the point is this. Right now, we see ourselves as, at best, furiously fighting our way into power to impose reforms on society, and then having to constantly repel the counterattacks of insane and ferocious leftists, I guess for all eternity. Because every election is the most important election in our lives, and if we lose, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. Well, obviously, we can't just keep doing that forever, right? We can't just win every contest forever against crazed, increasingly desperate, fanatical enemies. We've got to do something else. Now, one thing you might be saying is, yes, let's just end the left. End them, you know, just shut them down, take away all their power, close their parties, close their NGOs, make them all retire from their jobs at the county library and university faculties. And I agree, we should do all of that. We should definitely shut down their institutions. But that doesn't really end the left. That just ends the left as it currently exists in power. And if you shut it down, you would find in 30 or 35 years, it would be back, just like Franco found that they would be back. And after he ceded power at the end of his reign, the left was back. And how did it come back? Well, because he left institutions that educate and shape culture in the hands of leftists. So what we would have to do is not just attain political power and reform the political system. We have to change the culture. And that's a metapolitical project. I'm all about metapolitics. Of course, I want political power. But if you conceive of victory purely in a political way, it just sounds like a hopeless fight for all eternity against, again, increasingly crazed and vengeful and desperate enemies. Obviously, we can't risk everything on that, on winning every contest like that for all time. And therefore, we have to think in terms of a broader victory, and that is making our ideas culturally hegemonic. And if that sounds like pie in the sky, no, it's not pie in the sky at all. It's the system that we were living under until just recently, where leftist, globalist, anti-white, open borders ideologies were hegemonic. But we've been pushing back against that. That hegemony is failing. And as we move forward into the future, we have to create a counter-hegemony such that we can even have political pluralism. And that's inevitable anyway. Even if you have a one-party state, you're going to have factions within the one party, right? People will disagree. Disagreements will clump together. It's just the way of the world. You can have that, and it can actually be healthy in a society, but you can only have it by establishing and firmly maintaining outermost boundaries of polite conversation. Up until the present, the outermost boundaries of polite conversation and basically political possibility in America have been anti-white and, frankly, pro-Jewish. we can change that. And we can have in the future a society where you have a lot of political pluralism and disagreements about a lot of things, but all the parties are pro-white. That's the necessary condition for participating in polite society and entering politics, is to be pro-white. And at that point, we don't have to worry about winning every contest in the political realm, because we've set up the political system in such a way that our people can't lose. David, do you want to give your pitch, or should they just wait till next week and we'll put it on the website?
They should probably wait until next week, but a sneak preview is that is how we should, instead of practicing defense in law, we should create a fully functioning Death Star of an offensive law firm. And I think it's doable, but you'll see the whole thing next week.
Another thing that I would like to pitch to a billionaire is something that in another form was already successfully pitched to a billionaire. And that is a platform called WeSearcher. WeSearcher was created by this character named Chuck Johnson, no relation. Basically, he had the idea that he could create a platform that would offer bounties to whistleblowers who had information on important things. And it was a crowdfunding thing. So somebody could create a WeSearcher campaign, say, I want to see the first draft of Barack Obama's Dreams from My Father before it was rewritten. I will offer so much money for this. And people would put in money. And it, once it got to a certain point, you know, that it would be out there. And if anybody had a copy of it, they would come forward with it after a while because of the money. And that happened. They actually got a first draft of it, and it was very revealing. I would love to do something like this. And Martin Sellner actually suggested this recently with this horrible murder, basically through minority violence and police negligence, and not just negligence, but malevolence, of this young white man named Novak in the UK. This young man was stabbed by a non-white, and the non-white accused him of being racist, and the cops shackled the guy on the accusation of being racist and allowed it to lead to death. It's utterly shocking. We need to bring back the death penalty for cops who behave this way in the UK. Martin said, wouldn't it be great if there's video of this out there? We need to see the video. We need to have some way of incentivizing whoever might have video of this. And of course, there's probably police body cam video, and it's in some facility somewhere. And it's in the hands of people who might feel underpaid and don't like their bosses too, which is increasingly everybody everywhere. And wouldn't it be nice if we could offer basically a bribe, a bounty to these people to be whistleblowers? The Irina Zarutska murder video was dynamite. It was very powerful. And if we had the video of Austin Metcalf's murder, and I'm sure there's some video out there, that would be great. The city of San Francisco, the Bay Area Rapid Transit Authority, BART, said publicly that they don't share videos of crimes because it would encourage racism, which basically tells you what's on those videos, right? It would be great to have a platform that has money and that is willing to give people incentives to be whistleblowers. Now, there are all kinds of legalities connected here. Basically, you're suborning theft in some instances, at least. And so it would have to be set up in a particular way that, you know, you can't get thrown in jail or whatever. There are ways of doing these sorts of things. I would imagine WeSearcher actually did get off the ground. It was shut down eventually because they were deplatformed from their payment processor. Anyway, that is something I would like to pitch, because I think that would be dynamite to have. Imagine every Irina Zarutska style murder on video available. That would change people. It would be less and less deniable. There would be more and more of a consensus that we've got to fix things. And the same thing with this young man in the UK. If we could see what was going on there, it would be so intolerable that it would be more likely for things to change. So Sellner's right. We need something like this I've been talking about this for some time. We need to get something like WeSearcher back so we can get all this video evidence, plus a whole bunch of other stuff, right? There's all kinds of skullduggery out there. When North Carolina was ravaged by storms, right? Wouldn't it have been great if we could have had money for whistleblowers inside FEMA to document what turned out to be the case, that they were discriminating against white people and Trump supporters? Wouldn't it have been great to just be able to incentivize that information coming forward very quickly? I think that that would be extremely helpful. So that's another thing that I would pitch to a billionaire.
Right. There's a lot of stuff. You just even having a shoestring budget, but it's like there is no other option. You have to invest in us because MAGA's dead. People are just, they're in denial about it. And like they say in some of the century, you're going to need a black dam to stop the red tide. I'm paraphrasing here, but it's true.
Yeah, so I am looking at Jared's X account. I can still go to X. I just, they always tell me that I'm banned. And Jared has shared this on his account, this video. Oddly, the introduction has been cut off, but the actual speech by him is on there. It's about 5 minutes, 46 seconds exactly. It has been viewed 188,000.8 times. It has 90 comments, 1.3K bookmarks, 4.2K likes. So 188,000 and climbing. And Jared's followers count is 131,000.4. So it's been viewed by more than 50,000 more people than are actually following him. So it's been bouncing around on the internet. And this is good. When I put it out there, I said, share this widely, especially with the billionaire next door. We need to start thinking big, and we need to start getting our people who have credibility, and Jared has credibility. Jared's actually created an institution that's been around for 35 years now. People with credibility, people with vision to make these pitches and get practiced at doing it. I'm not good at it. I'd like to get better at it. And I wanted the people who came to the retreat to get some practice in. And we videoed these things, and they will be going out, and they will be floating around and going viral, and maybe they will be seen by billionaires. Out of that 188,000.8 people who have viewed that just on Jared's channel, I would bet you a lot of money that at least one billionaire has already laid eyes on this. It's important. We need to find our George Soros, many George Soroses. And of course, it doesn't need to be billionaires, but billionaires, well, they're richer than millionaires by factors of 1,000. So they do come in handy. Let's see if there are any more questions. I don't see any more emails coming in. I'm not seeing any more questions in the live stream chat. Folks, I think that basically wraps it up. So, David, do you have any final thoughts for today?
No, not really. Just keep reading Countercurrents.
Yeah, that's my line too. Tune in next week. And again, just keep reading Countercurrents in the meantime. Thank you.